I still have from last week a couple of outstanding debts, as Rav Baruch just pointed out. There were two questions raised last week that we really have in tying up the subject. It's important to address these two questions, which are both kind of revolving around the same point. One question was asked by Rav Baruch, and the other question was asked by Rav Noach. So first of all, Rav Baruch asked, right? We basically, what have we been discussing these last few weeks? We've been discussing that the word of Hashem is so great, so immense, so beyond our comprehension, that all we can do is just take the word of Hashem and conform. We can't try to figure out what we think makes sense, because we can't even begin to start relating to who Hashem is, let alone figure out what we should be doing for Him. So Rav Baruch asked, if so, it would seem that there's no room to be discussing the reasons for the mitzvahs. It's so big, so beyond us anyways, so that there's no room for discussing it. It's a lost cause, but yet, we do find many Svarim, beginning with the earliest authorities, did endeavor to go as deep as they can in explaining the reasons for all the different mitzvahs. So how are we supposed to understand this? That's one question that was raised last week. How do we understand the project of finding reasons for the mitzvahs in light of everything we've been discussing? The other question is a question that Rav Noach asked last week, is that if really everything that we relate to in the Torah came from the quote of yourself, everything that we relate to in the Torah is such a superficial level of the true depth of what the Torah is, what's the point? Right? That's what you asked. So I want to take a step back and ask a different question, which kind of, I think, includes both questions, and really is going to bring us to the next dimension of this whole discussion. It's very important in order to tie it up properly. Let me ask a different question. According to everything that we've been saying, we can only work with the dictates of Hashem, right? The only way to serve Hashem is not by using our seichel, because our seichel can never fathom the magnitude of what Hashem is, and it's by definition going to be beyond us. So, does that mean that Judaism is about pushing buttons mindlessly without involving the intellect? That's what would seem to come out, right? You're dealing with a system that's so great, so beyond you, you don't even begin to fathom it. Just do what you're told. So therefore, turn off your mind, push buttons, and that's all. But we know that Judaism is meant to be anything but that. That Judaism is a very, very inquisitive way of life. Thought is very much encouraged. It's considered, in fact, what's the greatest mitzvah of all? The greatest mitzvah of all is Talmud Torah, which is exactly this, the intellectual aspect of it all. So, how does it all come together? How does it all come together? So, here, I'll ask just one more question, and then we'll really get into tonight's discussion, which is really tying up or putting into perspective everything we've been discussing up till now. When we say that in following the word of Hashem, basically the way we've been setting it up was, it's about pushing buttons, only Hashem knows which are the right buttons to push, right? And only the ones that He tells you to push are going to have the right effect, and if you push the wrong buttons, even though it seems right to you, it's going to have the wrong effect. Right? So, a minute, I lost my train of thought. That's what it's all about. I forgot where I was going. Give me a minute, I'm sorry. I told you I wasn't feeling so well tonight. My mind blanked. Okay, we'll move on. We'll get on to the answer to these questions. I forgot the last question. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So we're talking about, you know, idea what's going on with the system. We might think we understand what's going on, but really we're just beginning, like, the first machine in the corner. And so we have no idea what's really going on at six. And therefore, there's no point in trying to understand or comprehend it, so we just do this.
Right.
And then Steve started saying, no, actually there is a point in learning that we actually can acquire a higher safety to accomplish something that we need to get to.
Right. That's basically what we have to understand today. And you reminded me of the next question I was going to ask, which is very fundamental. So we're told, you push the right button, it's going to make the right effect. The wrong button, it's the wrong effect. Only Hashem knows how the machine works, and therefore, don't mess with the buttons. So let me ask just one more question. So when you're told, for example, if you push the right button, it has the right effect, it's only an issue of the button. It makes no difference who pushes it. If this button has good effects, push it and have the effect. What I mean to ask is, when we're told that you take a lulav at this time, it's going to have very great effects. So, are you just the one who's getting the lulav into the right place at the right time? Or does it have to do with you? Are you a part of the button that's being pushed? I don't know if my question is so clear, if what I'm saying is clear.
But that's affecting you.
Ah.
You're pushing. It's a reaction and an interaction between the...
Your bank account.
This is right. It's more than the bank account. Actually, what Hashem is saying is more than just push that button. He's telling you push this button. Push it this way, push it that way. But the buttons that you're pushing are actually on a machine called you. Okay, still a little bit abstract at this point. But let me give a little bit of a mashal. Okay? We said that Hashem took the mitzvahs, which are already really much deeper, deeper things, right? And in order for us to be able to relate to it as physical people, He gave them physical manifestation in this world, but really we're dealing with much deeper things. Now we have to understand something. If, let's say, we can understand the significance of a specific principle, we understand, I can understand why it's wrong to steal. I understand that there's so much more to it. Right? I understand that there is immense depth to the mitzvah. That stealing is so much worse than I can possibly comprehend. Right? That means stealing is not an issue of, now that guy's bank account is $10 short, but this is an international tragedy of a historic magnitude. Right? Now, my understanding of why it's wrong is because I'm causing the guy a loss. Really? There's so much more depth to it. Is that depth completely unrelated to what I understand? Meaning, you understand this, the truth is that. And the answer here also is no. It's going to become more practical as we move on. The answer here also is no. Because when we say that Hashem gave the mitzvah a physical manifestation, that means that the whole setting that He put it into, along with the logic that you can connect, is all part of that superficial manifestation of the depth of the mitzvah. Which means that not only is the fact that stealing is wrong, representative of a deeper thing, but also your logical understanding of the fact that stealing is wrong is actually a superficial level of understanding of what's really wrong with stealing. Follow what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm being very clear. It'll get a bit clearer as we go on.
Is that to say that going in the airport is perfectly correct?
That's why this story that we gave about the boy in the airport, the soda machine mashal, the truth is not a good mashal. A better mashal would be, if the kid comes and says, I think that hospital is better than this hospital because there's always a cleaner smell there. And because things are efficient. Is that the reason that hospital is better than this hospital? Oh, there's so much more to it. But certainly it's a manifestation of the fact. This hospital smells cleaner. It smells more like alcohol, right? And the other one smells more like sheets. That's not why this hospital is better than this. It's much more complex than that. But the kid is onto something. He's onto something. It's not the soda machine, right? Just, we tell the kid that's good thinking. The truth is, there's a lot more to it. You're going to have to go to school for 20 years in order to really get it. But, you're on target. Okay? I think, is my direction getting a little clearer now? the logic of the mitzvahs, the seichel of the mitzvahs, is a part of what we're saying, that Hashem brought it down to our level. He brought it down to our level on the seichel level as well. Okay? And therefore, give another mashal, for example, a kid who plays Monopoly. Monopoly is a business game. Everybody's familiar with the game? Monopoly is a business game. A kid who's playing Monopoly, really likes the game, really gets into it, will start getting a certain sense of principles of business. Right? Is he ready to run a business? Is he ready to step into his father's office and take over the shop? No. But the principles that he understands, are they true principles which his father also works with? Yeah, sure. Just in his father's case, it's much more complex, infinitely more complex. The kid is light years away. Well, not really light years away, 20 years away of really getting it. But it's not that this has nothing to do with the depth of what a business really is. So actually, no. The logic is part of the Torah as well. The seichel of the Torah is part of the Torah as well. Just, there's a lot more to it. I'll say in parentheses, by the way, it's interesting. That Ibn Janah, I don't know if anybody ever heard of it. Ever heard of Ibn Janah? Ibn Janah? Ibn Janah is one of the Rishonim. One of the less famous ones. He was a big authority on Diktuk. A really early Rishonim. But he said something interesting, which is more along the soda machine mushroom. He said, when it comes to understanding the tam of a mitzvah, why is it called tam? Why is the reason called tam? Tam means taste. Why is it called tam? So you know what he said? He said something very interesting, which is a chash of an insight, even though we're going to give a deeper dimension of it. But he said, taste makes food palatable, but gives absolutely no indication as to the true nutritional value of the food. Okay? He said, the time of a mitzvah is, makes it tasty. Makes it tasty. Makes it kishmak. That's all. But, what's the true nutritional value of the food? Sometimes the taste, it can be the opposite. Right? Okay, that's what he says. So that in parentheses, and I don't know why I threw that in, because I'm actually not going in that direction right now. I'm going now much more with the direction of the Chodesh Halavos, etc., which is basically the general understanding of the concept of Torah learning, which I'm sure he also agrees with. But, okay.
You're saying that this is not a good reason.
What's that?
You're saying that the Rav's discussion right now is not a good reason.
Well, the question is to what extent he meant it. I don't think he meant it in an absolute way. I don't think he meant to say that the reason for a mitzvah has absolutely no connection to the true significance of the mitzvah. I don't think he meant that either. It's a good way of putting it. It conveys the idea that don't think you have it figured out. That's all. So the truth is that yes, on the contrary, part of the whole purpose, when we're saying that pushing a mitzvah, by doing a mitzvah you're pushing the right button. The main button to be pushing is your seichel, meaning as follows. The greatest mitzvah of all, we're told, is Talmud Torah. Why? Why is Talmud Torah the greatest mitzvah of all? Avos Rav Nosson says something very profound. This is the understanding. A very profound understanding of how much what our function in life is. It is as follows. Any particular mitzvah, example, his example is Oila. Person brings a carbon Oila. Adam Ikriv Oila. Schar Oila B'yada. He achieved the benefit of an oil, the advantage of an oil, he did a great thing. Adam loymed Torah. When a person learns Torah, Adam yodea datoy shel makor. A person now knows how Hashem thinks. Hear that? By learning Torah, what our objective in doing is developing the mentality of Hashem, developing the mindset of Hashem, developing the psyche of Hashem. This is a mind-boggling thing. And it's obviously going to have to be qualified with everything we've been discussing. But the purpose of learning Torah is for your mind to work the way Hashem's mind works. Hear that?
Our learning is seen from the prison of, I don't know, of the Gore, for example, comparing analysis, when we can apply, when we can't apply. That part of learning is how Hashem works. We have follows how Torah is Nidrash.
The Kolam of how Torah is Nidrash?
No one made it up. A person.
No. Halakha L'Moshe M'Sinai. Halakha L'Moshe M'Sinai, which means that all of these methods of analysis actually represent truths that are much, much deeper than we understand them. So the truth is, it's not just that the mitzvah of taking lulav has much deeper depth, but it's the logic that of a kal v'chomer, and that's why this halacha must be as it is, because it's based on a kal v'chomer, also represents a much, much deeper logic that we're connecting to on a superficial level.
Judaism is just that big logical.
What's that?
Judaism is just the ultimate logical. Like, more than that.
It's more than logic. The way I'm going to put it is psyche. That's the word I like to use. The whole conglomerate of intellect with emotion all coming together. Meaning, right now we're focusing on the logical aspect of it. Okay? Now this is a little philosophical what I'm doing here, but this is very, very fundamental. Right now we're focusing on the logical aspect of it, but there are other things also. For example, there are senses of right and wrong, senses of priority. Right? For example, I'll give an example of this on the emotional level to show how what we're talking here is, it's not just thinking the right things, but it's also feeling the right things. Right? When we feel disgusted by something that's disgusting in the Torah perspective, we have actually connected to an emotion of Hashem. This is by Hashem, it's much deeper. I'll give an example of this. The Torah says, Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yod tachas yod, regel tachas regel. Eye for an eye, etc. Right? Is that implemented? No, not implemented. What does it mean? You pay. Why does the Torah term it that way? The answer is, the Torah here is not just conveying a din, but it's conveying an attitude. The Torah is teaching you how you should feel about something. The Torah is saying, the feeling here is eye for an eye. That's what this person deserves. And the Torah wants you to feel that way. The Torah wants you to be utterly disgusted. If the Torah will just come and say, if a person knocks out somebody's eye, has to pay, you can relate to that in a technical way. The din is that he has to pay. I'm going to make him pay. The Torah wants you to feel disgusted. And therefore the Torah says eye for an eye. That's how you should feel about this guy. The Torah is trying to develop sentiments. So here we're saying it's more than just logic. Yes, by studying the 13 methods of analysis, the drushes, you're developing some of the Torah's logic. By studying these things, you're developing the Torah's likes and dislikes. Now, all these things are presented in a way that we can relate to. We learn to become disgusted when we see somebody strike another person. Now, that's really representing a much deeper, a true feeling, a true sentiment that really has much, much, much deeper significance. But you're connecting to the most, to a superficial level of it, but you are connected. An example of this, when I was in high school, I did a very short stint in high school before I came to Eretz Yisrael. A few experiences in high school that remained with me as lessons. One of them was, I was in high school. It was an English class. A man who was completely irreligious was teaching, and as is likely to happen during English class, two kids got into a fist fight. Okay? Two kids got into a fist fight, and one kid punched the other in the face. Now, part of the teacher's job is to break up fights. So he came to break up the fight. So he pulled the kids apart, and he kind of like had this little, like a half grin on his face, and he kind of like whispered to the kid who said, good cut. Right? Meaning, Lamaisa was a good move. You know, I go back to your seat, I can't allow this, but that was a good shot. That's exactly the point that we're making here. For a dayan to do that would be completely sacrilegious. Meaning, of course, it's not educational, etc. But here we're seeing how being opposed to one person punching the other can be a technicality. I can't allow that to happen, but that is, it's not a feeling. It's not something that I live. I gotta do it, but actually I thought it was a good punch. Right? The Torah is saying that with a dying, the feeling is, you know, you don't pat the guy in the back and say, look, I understand you, but you gotta pay. No. If you're being told to pay because you did that guy an injustice, the Torah is telling you, feel that it's disgusting, feel that it's repulsive, feel like this guy deserves to have his eye taken. So therefore, yes, the Torah is about, it's about developing the logic, and it's also about developing the feelings. And here, you're pushing the greatest buttons of all. Because really, what you're doing now is shaping yourself. The greatest entity in the world is the Jew. What is a Jew? Who are you? You're your personality. That's who you are. Are you your body? You're not your body. You switch your body all the time. You know that you're busy replenishing all the time. You're not the same you that you were. I don't know how long it takes to reface your whole body. But 7 days and everything is replaced. Oh, okay. So that's not you. What's that?
What are you replacing?
Your skin and everything is constantly being shed. You know what the dust on the top of your bookshelf is? It's the skin of your feet. You don't like to think of it that way. You pull up your socks, some of your feet go up into the air, land on your bookshelf. So treat it with more respect next time you dust it off. That's you. Okay, what do they call it? What's that? I use a wet rag. Okay, so who are you? You're your personality. It's expressed different ways in different sfarim. Neshama. Neshama is really something that we aren't sensing in this world. But seichel is the most physical manifestation of the neshama. The lev, you are your lev. Now lev, this also have to clarify, I'm going to use this term because this is really what we're talking about. You are your lev. Your lev really means your personality, your psyche. Lev is not heart per se. Lev is what I'm describing here, that whole picture of your mindset, your mentality, your sentiments, your feelings, your logic, your intellectual understanding, your perspectives on life. That's what the lev is, the personality we'll call it. The Jewish personality is the most sacred thing that there is in this world. And when we're talking about pushing those buttons, the main purpose of pushing those buttons is to shape your personality according to Hashem's dictates. It's not just an issue of pushing buttons in the cosmic world according to Hashem's dictates, or getting the lulav right according to Hashem's dictates. All these things are for the purpose of shaping your personality to be perfectly aligned with Hashem's whole value system, with Hashem's whole mentality, with Hashem's whole way of thinking. This you do by learning Torah. By learning Torah, by yes, taking each mitzvah and trying to delve as deeply as you can into the reason for the mitzvah, into the logic behind the mitzvah. By doing that, you're shaping your mind. You're shaping your mind, you're shaping your feelings, and you are aligning your neshama, or your personality, okay? We're not talking your neshama. You're aligning your mentality, you're aligning personality to simply reflect Hashem. And after you're busy with everything you're learning, you're tweaking a little bit more on your personality. And you're sanding down a little here, and you're reshaping a little bit over there. And the deeper you go, the more refined it's getting. So therefore, yes, all the logic that you are going to understand, and as much feelings as you are going to develop, there will always be further details that you're not going to have. It's mamish like the kid playing Monopoly, and the father is playing with him because he wants to develop in the kid a business sense. But yet, the kid is still very far from understanding the real business. But that the greatness of what we accomplish in this world is by turning ourselves into reflections of Hashem on a very superficial level. Very superficial level. A very physical level. But actually what we turn into, this is what we call Merkava Lashkina. A person who learns Torah in this way, a person who absorbs Torah, a person who develops the Torah's sentiments and feelings, turns into what we call Merkava Lashkina, a chariot of the Shekhinah. It's a very, very precise phrase. It's not just a fluffy expression. Because the more a person lines himself up with Hashem, the more Hashem can connect. The more compatible he is with Hashem, and the more Hashem actually does connect with him. So actually, with each mitzvah that you're learning, sometimes, you know, there's a machine that you plug in. But like sometimes, if, let's say a bigger, more complex computer system, there's a lot of different things, right? You have to plug in. There's the audio and the video, and the more complex the system, the more things there are to plug in. Sound system upstairs, right? So what you're doing is you're plugging in another thing, and you're plugging in another thing, and you're refining it, and refining it. And the connection between you and Hashem, the more you do this, is intensifying and intensifying and intensifying. Therefore, we understand that yes, it all does begin with the dictates of Hashem. But the whole point is to take even greater than actually carrying it out physically is taking your seichel and applying it to these dictates and forming your seichel according to these dictates. Learning to start identifying with these dictates, learning to start feeling them, to start reflecting these sentiments. And therefore, for example, the question is asked, what's better for a person to say, I abhor pig's meat, or for a person to say, I like it, but I'm not going to eat it because the Torah doesn't play? What's that? Oh, so you're referring to Chazal that say, that's right, say that a person should not say, pig's meat is disgusting. A person should say, I like it, it's appealing, but the Torah doesn't matter, therefore I'm not going to. But actually, that's not the final goal. The final goal is to end up at a situation where you say, I abhor it. But, what's that? Because I said that there are two levels, there are two stages. This is the Chodesh Havavah. It's very much stresses that the point is that you want to come to line up your feelings. There are two types of abhor. There's a type of abhor that it's nauseating. I don't like it because it's nauseating. Now we say that's not the reason not to like it. The reason not to eat it is because Hashem said not to eat it. Now, after you acknowledge that Hashem said not to eat it, and after you gain a deeper appreciation for Hashem, and after you begin growing in your understanding of Hashem, your appreciation of your relationship with Him, you reach a situation where you abhor the thought of eating pig's meat, not because you find it physically offensive, but because the thought of, now that you have connected to Hashem's sensitivities, the thought of doing something that Hashem considers disgusting, disgusts you. It's a higher level. It's a different level of abhorring. What's that?
I didn't get the difference.
I'll try to think of a mashal. I'll give a mashal. If your parents, we'll go back to our good old mashal of scraping on the blackboard. Okay? Your parents can't stand it. You can handle it. Right? No, sorry. You also can't stand it. Okay? Now, you're sitting with your parents in the room, and someone scratches on the blackboard. You are rubbed wrong. Why? Because it nauseates you. It happens to nauseate your parents too. Now, the fact that it nauseates you, does that show any nobility on your part toward your parents? No. Then you have a person who doesn't bother him in the least. But knowing he's so conscious of the fact that it bothers his parent that he jumps when he hears it. Okay? Now, at the end of the day, it bothers the two of them. But in one case, it's a physical reaction. In the other case, it's a noble feeling. Okay? That's what I'm saying here. You reach a situation where you cannot stand the sight of an aveira, something bad, because you have so lined up your sensitivities with Hashem that you can't stand it. Not just because I don't like it anyways. So, ultimately, yes, when we're talking about achieving true perfection, we're talking about really lining up all of your sensitivities, your thought processes with Hashem's.
How do these two levels of
abhorrence
relate to the
Chazal? So certainly, to naturally not like pork does not show any greatness in your part. But if you have a person who liked pork in his previous life, then he became a Baal Tshuva. And after learning so much about how pork is usher, pork is usher, pork is usher, he can't stand the thought of, by now, even though he had liked it at one time, the thought of pork just is repulsive. It's because now he has ingrained, he has developed a new sensitivity based on his study of Hashem's sensitivities. Now this is very relevant. Let me show an example. This is relevant for all of us. Let me ask you. I'll show an example where all of us have developed this. You're sitting here on the chair, and there's a siddur right there on the floor. For whatever reason, you are anus. You can't pick it up. Will you be able to focus on whatever it is you're doing, or will it be bothering you the whole time? There's something wrong here, right? I think that all of us can connect to this. Something isn't right. You can be glancing over at it the whole time. What's wrong with the siddur on the floor? You know what's wrong with the siddur on the floor? What's wrong with it, as far as you're concerned, is you have become so used to the idea that it's wrong that it feels wrong to you. This is an example of us having developed a sentiment of halacha. Now, it all of a sudden feels wrong to me. The sight of a siddur on the floor just looks wrong to me. And it's not just in an intellectual way. It bothers me. That's an example of what we're talking about. A person is developing sensitivities based on involvement in halacha. What's that? No, this is not contrary. Well, it would be contrary to what Chazal say, would say, I don't like the sight of siddur on the floor because the colors don't colors clash, and I can't stand the color clash. So I want that siddur off the floor. Halacha also wants the siddur off the floor. We're on the same team. That's what Chazal is talking about. I don't like it. I don't like it. Flavor it differently, maybe I would. But I don't like it. Right? But if the reason you don't like it is because you have become sensitized to the Torah sensitivities, that's a great one.
So, we have, maybe another way I've heard it expressed, like some things are beyond the kind of tira. So, I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but like, pork doesn't bother me because I'm not challenged by it.
Well, pork doesn't bother you, that's in the sense that it doesn't tempt you. But when pork is beyond your bechira, what that would mean is, when you have a person, pork is beyond his bechira. Let's say me or you. If you were to sit down at a plate, and again, pikuach nefesh, halachically acceptable, you'll eat it, and it'll have a hard time getting it down your throat. You'll feel that way, right? So that's what we're talking about. When something is under a person's bechira, it's on the contrary, it's so well ingrained, that means that when he does clash with it, it's just under your bechira means Chilul Shabbos is under your bechira. That means that you'll have such a hard time with Chilul Shabbos because it's completely out of your whole level of experience. So this is really the depth behind what we're saying. When we're talking about understanding that there's more to understand, that's so on the intellectual level also. We're meant to be developing that intellectual understanding. But yet, always with the understanding that you're just scraping at the tip of the iceberg. I'll give another example of this, of a person managed developing the thought process. It's known that the great Paiskim would rule on things that don't appear in halacha. For example, Rav Eliyashiv would rule on life and death questions off the cuff. We had an experience with him. My brother had preemies, born very, very early. They were in a very, very precarious state. And at one point, it was mamish touch and go. And basically, the doctors in the hospital gave up. They didn't expect them to survive through Shabbos. This was like Thursday nightish. They said, they're not going to make it past Shabbos. And they said something doctors don't usually say. They said, if there's anyone else you can get involved, you know, isn't there? But they weren't going to make it past Shabbos. I'm going back in time. Today, these are two healthy 10-year-olds. But, okay, clearly not going to make it past Shabbos. And a specialist came in from a different hospital and somehow came up with some sort of steroid treatment that he felt would push up the chances of survival, yet had a very, very high risk of side effects that would cause permanent, significant damage. Now again, he would not be pushing up the chances of survival in a very significant way. It would be bettering them a bit, but it was very, very large chances. I don't know if it was close to certain, how close to certain, I don't know if it was 70% or 90%, I don't know. But very high chances, much higher proportionately than they'd be pushing up the chances of survival. Okay? And my brother and his wife, young couple, and this is their first, they are presented, the doctors tell them, your decision. How are they supposed to make such a decision? You need a heavyweight discretion. So, we have a cousin, his nephew, Reb Chaim Kanievsky. I told him to ask Reb Chaim Kanievsky, And here he threw them even into a deeper whirlpool. He said, I would lean towards not doing it, but I can't answer. Which really made them confused. So they pushed. My cousin went back and said to the Chaim, so who could answer this question? Only Rabbi Yosh. So it was already Friday, it was mamish before Shabbos. They came to Rabbi Yosh, and he asked for the data he wanted to get from the doctor. This doctor already had experience with him in other cases. The Gabbayin said, get from the doctor exactly the figures. We'll take it in. Took it into Rabbi Yosef. Here are the figures. Off the cuff. Do it. Without a moment's hesitation, they did it.
Baruch Hashem.
Yeah. Yeah. On both sides of the... Now, where did he learn that halacha? What did he do? It wasn't Ruach HaKodesh. Whenever he asks these types of questions, he often makes it very clear, that if you're coming for a Rebbe Shaila, you're coming for a Ruach HaKodesh Shaila, you want to know what's going to happen, I don't know, go somewhere else, there are Rebbes around the corner. If you come to me, come for a Halacha Shaila. Which means that this was a halachic ruling. I'm not saying the baby's going to survive or not going to survive. You want to know what's the halachic discretion. In such a case, this is the halachic discretion. Nothing to do with telling the future. Right? So, where did he learn that halacha? Nowhere. Look at all of Shulchan Aruch, all of Shas. It's not that there exactly happened to be a case somewhere. You're talking about a person who spent so much time going through so much of Torah until he actually became acquainted not just with the halachas, but with the thought process, with the discretion. Right? He started developing Torah discretion. This is really what's behind the concept that we call Das Torah. What is Das Torah? Right? Say, the Torah authorities, they are authorized to rule on contemporary questions that they can't show you a source for. What is that? Is that Ruach HaKodesh? Is that Ruach HaKodesh? Maybe there's Ruach HaKodesh also. I don't know. I'm not discounting. But that's not the concept of Das Torah. It's not that. It's that this person is more attuned to the Torah's way of thinking. Not just that, in this sefer it says that that's what you should do. This person, by putting so many years of effort into this, has become attuned to the Torah's way of thinking, not just the particular instances. He's become accustomed. He's seen so many cases where halacha weighs one thing against the other that he's developed the thought process. He's developed the discretion. And therefore, yes, he's coming and issuing a halachic ruling. You want to know what the source is? He might have to start thinking back 60 years to go through all the things he studied and how he came up with it. He might not be able to. He might not be able to identify. But he was saying it, obviously, with the confidence. He was a responsible person, Rabbi Yosher. Nobody knew him. He was not the Rebbe type at all to be, throwing out brachas and things like that. He's a very responsible person. I mean that he felt confident that this is what halacha says, even though no one could tell you that this is explicit anywhere. Why? Because this person had absorbed the thought process, the discretion. This is what we're talking about. So, on the contrary, we take the dictates of Hashem with the understanding that it's so much greater than us, and we use that not only to dictate what we do, but to shape our minds, to shape our mentalities. And that's why the truth is, any question of right and wrong, any question of values, has to be determined by the Torah. People go to ask, Rav, what should I eat for breakfast? Sometimes people just have indecisive. They're sitting down, he can't make up his mind. Should it be hard-boiled egg or scrambled egg? So he calls his Rav. Okay, that's called indecisive. That's not called seeking Torah counsel. You want someone else to relieve you of the burden. But whenever there's a question of values, of right and wrong, it's a Torah question. It's a Torah question because Torah is not just a collection of cases. Torah is a mentality. Torah represents Yisrael v'Arayso, sorry. Torah represents the way Hashem thinks. In fact, that's also why Torah is what? Torah is the greatest of mitzvahs, because, and here I'm going to say the words without completely understanding them, the Torah represents not just Hashem's mentality, but what is Hashem? I don't know what Hashem is. But as far as we're concerned, Hashem is only intellect. It's just an operating intellect that can actually activate things. There's nothing physical about it. By developing Hashem, the Seichel of Hashem, you are actually Kabiyokal, Mamish connecting. It's not just that you have a copy of that same big Seichel. You are actually connecting to it. That's how the Lashon of the Lashon is. When a person is learning Torah, that's the greatest means of bonding with Hashem, because Hamaskil v'aseichel v'hamuskal echad. That's the word, the Lashon. Hamaskil v'aseichel v'hamuskal echad, meaning the intellect, meaning the not the intellect, but the, how do you say, the concepts, right? The one absorbing the concepts and the one conveying the concepts are really all just one. Another way he puts it is Hashem's will is Hashem, right? Hashem's will, Hashem manifests himself through his will. By connecting to Hashem's will, by bringing Hashem's will into your mind, you have brought Hashem into your mind. That's why learning Torah is the greatest of mitzvahs, because it doesn't just shape what you do, but it shapes who you are. You're turning yourself into a piece of godliness. These are mind-boggling things, and they obviously have to be taken in perspective. You can't start bowing down to yourself after you've learned a lot of Torah. But that's mamish what you're doing. You are raw material. What's the Tzelem Elokim? Man is Tzelem Elokim. What's the Tzelem Elokim? The Sfarna says, Tzelem Elokim is not something to pat yourself on the back for. Tzelem means raw material. It's godliness, but it's raw material. What is that raw material? The Seichel, he says. Tzelem Elokim is a Seichel, but it's raw material. You can now shape it and make it into real godliness. You can also take it and completely corrupt it. But by shaping it, you are turning yourself into a godly being. A godly being. A person who simply manifests Hashem. The more you have absorbed his way of thinking, so to speak, you manifest Hashem. Now, therefore, we understand that there's no conflict here. When the Khuzari is talking about, he's talking about on the level of practical performance. But the same is true on the intellectual level also. We understand that in order to have a true intellect, you also have to come with the approach of, I can't figure out what's logical for myself. I have to shape my logic after there is logic. I have to shape my feelings after there is feelings. It's all mamish, the same, everything that the Khuzari is saying, simply taken to the dimension of intellect, seichel, emotions, sentiments. And that's actually taking it to its greatest level. That's now one of the ways that the Chodesh HaBavli sums up our whole function here in this world, is to shape our perfection of mind. Perfection of mind. Okay. Have I answered the questions? I think I've answered the questions. What were the questions? We go back to the questions. What's that?
Did Rabbi Eliyashiv ever elaborate?
No, it wasn't the time. He gave his ruling, and basically his approach was, you don't like the answer? Do something else. Okay.
So, why pat myself on the back? You know, we came from America, we see a lot of non-religious Jews. Still, Shabbos doesn't bother us so much. But, I don't know, you have this come up because a cousin, a distant cousin, we got an invitation to a wedding. He's marrying someone of the same gender. We got the invitation, and we're like, ugh, they're disgusted at it. So what is that? Is that reaction because I find that abhorrent? Am I doing a mitzvah here? It's because I'm so ingrained.
The extent of that disgust is clearly a manifestation of your madrega. Yes. And yes, we should pat ourselves on the back for that. This is kosher agayim. Because living in today's world, you should not feel that disgusting. You should be a bit more open-minded. You should be more tolerant. Why aren't you? It's because of the Torah's influence. And yes, there's no question that there are a lot of things that are unconsciously ingrained in us, but that's exactly what it is. We became so used to these sensitivities that they're second nature. But it's second nature. And that's exactly what we're discussing here. Go further, right? Refine it even more. Right? Learn more Torah and more Torah and more Torah. That's what the Chazon Ish says. You see that great poskim took great offense and they got all, you know, emotional at what seems to be a technicality of halacha. But why? Since they put so much effort into really learning it up, it became something that they really just, it doesn't sit well with them to see it handled wrong. I'll give an example. This is something that will not sit well with most modern day parents. The Chazon Ish did not believe in giving homework. Listen to the reason. Now, I won't say homework in a general way, specific type of homework. Giving worksheets. Why? Worksheets that contain psukim and divrei Torah are given to 7-year-old kids. What ends up happening to them? In the garbage. So, okay, people try to be on top of it, this, that. But we all understand that if all across the globe they're giving out worksheets to kids between the age, with psukim and divrei Torah, between the age of 4 and 10, a nice percentage is going in the garbage, and therefore the Chazon Ish felt that these types of sheets should not be given out, whether in the form of quizzes, whatever. They shouldn't be put into the hands of kids. So one of the principals of one of the schools was talking to him, and he was like telling the Chazon Ish, he said, you know, we could try to work it out in a way, coming up with different, you know, ideas how we can minimize it, because again, to anybody involved in schooling is completely absurd. Chazon Ish was coming from a different perspective. We, you know, homework is a given. Now, the question is, what do we do with this? But he's coming from a minute. This sensitivity is a given. Now, can homework work with that? Well, whatever it is, this principal was coming up with all kinds of different suggestions. And the Chazon Ish said, look, he said, all these suggestions, you understand that they're not providing an airtight solution to the problem. He said, so there's no room for us to discuss it, because it really boils down to how sensitive each of us are to the issue. So you're apparently not as sensitive as I am. If you would be as sensitive as I am, then you such a solution that's not airtight, which no solution will be, you're not going to be comfortable with. So that's an extreme story. I don't know how it's meant to be taken, Lamaisa. I'm sure that there are mahalchim and there are different opinions, and I don't know. My point here is the point of this story. As I said, I don't even verify for the truth of that. I'm not even going to verify the truth of this story. I wasn't there. Chazon Ish died before I was born. But the point of this story is a fundamental point, and that is that once again, what are you talking about? The more finer details of halacha. Who's going to feel so emotional about that? The answer is somebody who really, really worked on them. The answer is someone who really put a lot of effort into studying them. They turned into a part of his personality. It doesn't sit well with him, right? So again, leave the example. But the point is so fundamental. The point is so profound. Okay.